Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. On this very special episode of Inquiry, we talk with Megan Jasper, CEO of Sub Pop Records out in Seattle. She has a great essay in the new book, This Woman's Work, Essays on Music. And back in the day, she was a rock host on Positive Noise right here in WICN. Megan, what a pleasure, Mark, to talk to you back here on WICN.
Oh my God, it's like a dream come true.
That's weird to hear, but it's like, oh my God. First of all, we have to talk about the show that you did here, and I want it in your own words, because I'll tell you, that show was wild.
It was nuts, yeah. It was nuts, and it was also one of the best things I've ever done, because first off, it was with Judy Robichaud, whose sister also had a show on WICN.
Joanne.
And Joanne. And my sister, Mara Jasper. And so to do something with your friends, but especially when you're a kid and you're a teenager and you're not old enough to do some shit, but oops.
That's okay.
Probably shouldn't have
Keep
sworn.
Going. Keep going.
But you are too old to do other stuff. It's like, to actually be able to be immersed in music and be able to sort of explore all the new stuff that's coming out and celebrate it and have fun with it. It was amazing. And I felt like it gave all of us like a purpose and something positive to do that, you know, we loved.
What was amazing is fairly quickly it became one of the best shows that we had on Positive Noise. Now, Positive Noise used to run from 11 at night to 6 in the morning. There'd be two shifts. And to the three of you, because it sounded so spontaneous, and you also just went out and you got bands to come, you know, and all sorts of other stuff. It was a great show. Like I had, and you did a lot of talking. And
we did a lot of talking.
And it was fun. It was really excellent to hear it. And so the amazing thing is you may have thought, well, wow, we're just starting this out. But the show is very popular.
That is so
People
funny.
Still talk and about that show today.
It's hilarious because we didn't really know what we were doing, but we had a lot of fun.
That was the good thing,
it.
I think. I think you made it up as you went along.
Yeah, we sort of set our own rules other than, like, we knew not to swear on the air. And, you know, we tried to just kind of behave ourselves. But the funny thing was when we didn't think there were any listeners, when the phones were really quiet, we would try to taunt anyone who might be listening.
I remember that, yep.
And we would often put them on the air.
I know that.
But it was so much fun. And you know what else we loved doing that was a real surprise was fundraising. We loved the fundraising.
That's abnormal.
But you know what? Why we loved it? We would put on like the Circle Jerks, and we would sing the songs until people donated money. And if
that's
they
excellent.
Donated, it shut us up.
Well, that's the thing. There's nothing like fundraising at 12 o'clock at night. You know, it's like you had to come up with something like weird. We used to do remotes from inside the bathroom. We ended up on one show where we were. I forget who I was on with, but we weren't getting anybody. So we started dialing people at random, like around the United States.
amazing.
And then put it on the air and like try to convince them to like pledge. And we actually got people to send in money.
Oh, that's amazing.
But that's the kind of people don't understand. First of all, we should talk about the time period this is.
Right. This was early 80s.
And so, it was a great time to be on the air doing alternative, what was then called alternative music, because everything was happening at that time.
Everything was happening. There was so much great music coming from like all parts of the world.
Yeah, it was incredible.
And
actually,
really
bands
was.
Dropped by on their way to Boston when they were playing and stuff like that. It was for me, it was incredible to have these bands, you know, just drop by to say hello. Sometimes weird stuff happened when we were on the air late at night. I once had a biker gang show up on my show.
Oh my God.
And I'm glad it wasn't your show, because that would, as a parent, that would have made me feel really nervous. But all of a sudden, you know where we were. All of a sudden, there's this pounding on the door, and I went, "What?" And I'm there by myself, and there were like eight guys in leather with their women, and they were drunk and on all sorts of nefarious substances. So luckily I'd had an alcoholic father, so I knew how to deal with people. And so I invited them in, I gave them free records, and eventually, you know, edged them on the way out. Now, what I got to ask you, I know. So what's the weirdest thing that ever happened to you on the air?
Oh, that's a great question. The weirdest thing that ever happened to me or us on the air, I mean, I guess we never had anything like that. Well, I'll tell you, it wasn't totally on the air, but the weirdest thing was that in the building that housed WICN,
at that point,
there was also the Department of Youth Services.
That's right, Juvenile Court was there.
Yes, and guess who went there? Me and Mara.
No.
Probation. Yes, Mara and I had a probation officer, Skip, who worked at the DYS office. And which also kind of cracked me up that DYS was one of our favorite
hardcore
bands in Boston. But we would go to the bummer DYS in Worcester, and we had weekly meetings with our probation officer. So that was the weirdest thing, was that the absolute low point of my week was in the same building as the absolute high point of my week, which was going to a WICN.
Now, at that time, at that age, not in retrospect, name me some of your favorite bands.
Oh, man. SSD Control.
Oh, yeah.
The FUs, Minor Threat, Husker Du.
Husker Du is still great.
Oh, my God. I still listen to Husker Du so much. Loved New Order, Joy Division. We were talking about them earlier. Stiff Little Fingers.
Oh, SLF, man. Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. I just, the great thing is they have reissued a lot of the British punk in these sets of CDs and stuff like that. So you can order all SLF's records. And they hold up. SLF is great still.
Yeah, there's so much great music from that time period that I still go back and listen to, and it I feel like there are so many of those bands went on to inspire so many killer bands that are making music right now.
That's really true. It's really true. Whenever I talk to a band or I interview somebody, and they talk about who their influences are, it's always from that time period. The sad thing is how much of that music shows up in commercials now too.
Yeah, I know, it is really weird. But like The Fall and Gang of Four, you can go back and
Fall is one
of
my top 10 favorite bands.
Oh, they were so good. I saw them once and I feel so fortunate.
How were they live? How were they live?
Amazing.
So Mark Smith was like incredible. Was he as weird as I thought he'd be?
Yeah, it was super weird, thank God, because it would be a bummer if he wasn't. And what I remember the most was being so stoked, and I was right up front, and I just remember getting, like, the stage, like, you know, it's like you're up against the stage and tons of people, and you're just getting squished, but I was so happy. I mean, you know, it's like, just squish me. I'm in front of The Fall, and they're playing.
What was incredible is that everybody who was in the rock department at that point brought some attitude or some perspective on what they were doing, and somehow we all got along did great shows, and we did some amazing things. I mean, there were I don't know if you remember this, but I spent the night with Pete Shelley. He came down
my God, crazy. I don't remember this.
He the president of like the Buzzcocks fan club here in was here in Massachusetts. She used to call me all the time and request Buzzcocks. And she, all of a sudden, you know, Pete Shelley's down on with me live. And it was to promote Homo Sapien, which was sort of, yeah, I know. Those were incredible times. And, you know, I look back, that was the best time for me for music because you get to see a lot of live music too. Now, the thing I never knew, and this is the part, you have this essay in This Woman's Work, Essays on Music, which is a dynamite collection of essays, by the way, and people should pick it up, which what it was like to be at Sub Pop back when it was just starting out. But how did you get there? Like, talk to me about how you left Worcester and ended up in Seattle.
So the way I ended up in Seattle was really through Dinosaur Jr. because I was on tour with the band, and they were on the Bug Tour. And so while I was in the van, I was thinking, I didn't really know what I was going to do afterwards when tour was over, but I thought, I'm just going to see if there's a place that speaks to me. And when I landed in Seattle for their show was phenomenal, by the way. They played at a place called the Central Tavern. They had Tad and the Screaming Trees opening the show. It was amazing. But there was something about Seattle. All the evergreen trees reminded me of Maine.
Had you ever been to the West Coast before?
Close to the water. No, I'd never been to the West Coast. L.A., San Francisco, Portland, and Seattle, and it was my first time for all of it, and I can't believe I loved it.
So
it was, but I felt at home, and there were exciting things that were happening musically. You know, like Mudhoney was doing really well, and I really liked Mudhoney. Nirvana was starting to sort of get a buzz, and that I loved Nirvana. But there was cool stuff happening, and there were a lot of young people starting businesses. Like, you really felt that energy, like almost immediately. It felt different, and it felt exciting. Now, and I just thought, screw it, I'm going to go there. And I did.
That's a huge leap of faith. Did you have a place to go or anything? I'm speaking as a parent now. Did you have any place to go?
But you know, my good friend Julia came out about a month ahead of me. And she said, well, let me know when you're here. She had just gotten an apartment, so I was able to sleep on her couch.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, so I did have, like, a destination that I could go to and a person who knew me. But, you don't know how anything will unfold. But you kind of have to jump in and try stuff.
That was an amazing leap. And I admire you for doing that. Now, did you just show up at Sub Pop Records and like ask, can I do something?
Yes. So, I know I'm desperate, Mark. when Dinosaur was playing that show months earlier, I said to them, I think I want to come back here, and they said, if you do, let us know, and. They said, you know, come down and visit us or whatever. So, I mean, I landed in Seattle, and that next morning I went down to Sub Pop, and I said, hey, do you remember me? Blah, blah, blah. They said, yeah, come on in. I said, can I intern? I had nothing to do. I didn't have a job. And so they let me intern. I was thrilled.
Oh, no kidding. In the essay in the book, though, it sounds like your internship pretty quickly sort of segued into you being the receptionist for money.
I was really, for $5 an hour. I felt like I'd won the lottery.
Yeah, I totally get that. I would feel the same way, but it's amazing, like, the portrayal of Sub Pop at that point in time makes WICN look like a Fortune 500 company. Yeah,
it's true. It was such a chaotic mess, but it was the best and the most amazing mess you could ever imagine.
Oh, wow.
Because it was all music lovers. It was all creatives. You know, there were no business people, which ended up kind of becoming a real challenge. We learned as we went along.
Now, talk to me about the first level of bands at Sub Pop that you were dealing with. Mudhoney was one of them. Mudhoney sort of begins your essay and sort of ends your essay.
Yes. They are, like, the defining band, I think. Like, they're the defining band for Sub Pop. They're one of the defining bands for Seattle. Yep. And they're still making really
That's
awesome
right.
music.
You know, and it's funny because here in the East Coast, we don't have the same sense of the music as you do there. Because for us, obviously, we think about Nirvana And then there's a lot bunch of other bands that's going to sort of get lumped in there with the grunge name.
Yeah.
But Mudhoney is barely mentioned here. And I know, I love their music, and I know that they were huge.
Yeah. But you know what's funny is this is the thing about our country. Because, like, when we were doing, when I was doing the show at WICN, it was like Mission of Burma on the East Coast and the Wipers on the West Coast.
You're right.
Like, if you lived on the West Coast, the Wipers, that was your band. And, you know, for the rest of us on the East Coast, it was all about Mission of Burma. It, both bands, amazing. But I feel like that kind of is the deal with Mudhoney. I mean, they go to shows. They travel all over the world, and they have tons of people show up at their shows. But I think they really, the role that they play in the Northwest and on the West Coast, it really is much greater.
And there's great other bands, too, that unless you were working at an alternative rock station here, you wouldn't have played, like Screaming Trees.
Yeah, yeah. We have the Screaming Trees, which that, they're my favorite band from out here. Tad.
Yep.
Who were amazing and so much fun live. Soundgarden doing their thing.
Soundgarden crossed the United States. Soundgarden was also really huge here. Yeah.
But yeah, they were huge. But yeah, there were so many exciting bands. There was and there were some really interesting women musicians too, which like it was so dude heavy.
Totally get that.
There was a lot of testosterone, but you know what? It's like the women push through, and there were really cool women making music. We had 7 Year Bitch. We had the Gits.
You had the L7.
L7, who were from LA, but signed to Sub Pop, and that EP that they released in, I think it was 1990, it is incredible. It's so strong. It's so good. Yep. It has so much like just attitude. It's
well, there was that era when women really seemed to sort of come into their own independent voice. I think of bands like Sleater-Kinney. L7 and it's really interesting because today when I go to do a show, I'll look back and I'll go, more than half the people I played are women artists.
Yeah.
And that wasn't true back when we were on the air.
No, it was definitely not true. There were so few women. I remember seeing X perform in Boston and I was like, oh my God, I worship X. I want to be that. I want to have that confidence and like that strength that she really shows.
They played in Worcester too.
Yeah. How amazing that they're still performing.
Yeah. Although Exene's been weird. I've actually interviewed Exene on this show about her artwork, about her, her collage work, which is really, really fascinating. But when I look at it, you know, it's funny, even from Sub Pop label, like a band that I've been playing a lot of is Taco Cat.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
Riding the Crimson Wave, I just did an interview about women in periods through the history, and actually I used that as the background sound. And the woman who wrote the book, I thought maybe she's going to get really upset about it, but she loved it. So
That is so great. You could have just shortened it to Women in Periods.
Now I have to ask you this because it's funny. Just before I talk to you, I talked to somebody else who was in this class. Talk to me about Nirvana, who were from Tacoma. Okay, you have a great story in this essay about Kurt and a rabbit with a prolapsed uterus. People have to read the essay to get that. When Kurt Cobain killed himself, I was teaching an art class here at the Worcester Art Museum in comics. And when I came in that day, in all seriousness, kids were crying. And people were, like, severely depressed. And we had to stop the class, which was a 3-hour class, and do, like, essentially a psych encounter session to get everybody to unload. So wow. Talk to me about what it was like to be in Seattle.
You know, it was a lot like that, honestly. It was so shocking. And the thing that was different maybe in Seattle is that, you know, at that point, Kurt was such an icon.
Yeah.
And I think when that happens, it's like it's hard to actually see the human
yep.
beneath it all.
Yeah, yep.
But here, you know, this is a small city, and there were so many people who knew him or who were directly impacted on a personal or professional level by his death. And so it was a little bit different in that it felt more personal, but it was heavy and it was shocking. And even though maybe it shouldn't have felt like it was such a surprise, it yeah. still was for whatever reason.
It was
a heavy time.
It was really, it was on a level of when Bowie died. That's how I have yeah. to explain it. Except, especially for younger people, it was for me as a teacher, I was freaked out. Now, we're going to run out of time because we could talk forever. But I have to say that your little run-in with the New York Times on the grunge lexicon, which is mentioned in this essay, was the funniest thing I've ever seen. You have to talk about that.
Mark, I'm a liar. I didn't know I was that good at it.
It was a perfect storm for the New York Times. So talk to me. Did the setup. They wanted to interview you about what all the different words were in grunge. First of all, no, as yeah. you write in this essay, nobody's using the word grunge in Seattle. It's used in yeah. fashion magazines and stuff like that.
Yeah, we didn't use that word. It was still considered a dirty word. And who talks like that? Nobody. No one talks like that. But they wanted to dig into the subculture. That's what they were saying.
Oh,
and
God.
And really put a spotlight on it. And, you know, when someone wants to do that and they're saying it in that way, it's like there is only one way to respond, and that is with a pair of double mids. That's when you put up those middle fingers and you just kind of, you got to respond that way. There's no other way. But, you know, there was no internet back then, which
That's
is
right.
also really funny to think about. And had there been, that would never have happened. It would never have gone to print.
But it did.
But it sure was fun.
People will get the whole story by reading this essay and make sure you buy a copy of this book. You for a time, you lost your job at Sub Pop, then you gained it back, and now look where you are. There's a really wonderful point in the book where newer acts start to come on to the label, and I think about the Shins, and
yeah.
And Sleater-Kinney, and talk to me about your first reaction to listening to the Shins.
You know, the thing about the Shins is that like there's sort of this levity to their music. It's fun and it's
right.
uplifting, and but also in it they have such incredible lyrics. James Mercer he's such a smart lyricist.
Yeah.
And so it was like smart and quirky and weird, and it felt positive and immediately catchy. And we so desperately needed something that could just hold us together and drive us forth. And
yep.
it's so appropriate that actually showed up in the form of a band.
Huh.
And that's
really
what the Shins
cool.
did for us. They really kind of created this weird glue, and they made us an unstoppable team. They inspired
wow.
us.
Wow. It, like I mentioned before, it's really interesting to me, and I didn't do this because you're there, but when I look at bands that I'm playing doing Positive Noise, it's amazing how many like new releases or relatively new releases from bands like Wolf Parade, Iron Wine, Low, Bob's Burgers. I can't believe you guys released two sets of the music from Bob's Burgers. That was
I can't either. I love it.
I know, it's amazing. So except the damn cuts are really short. I'm glad.
Yeah, they are.
But, you know, there are artists that come out. It seems like you're throwing a wider net to the kind of music that you're putting out. Is that safe to say?
That's for sure true. But I'd also say that the reason why we're able to do that is because people now are so much more open to what they consume.
You're right.
And especially at a younger age, like, I think when I was a kid, I felt like I had blinders on. It was all about like punk rock, hardcore, some new wave. But, you know, I was closed off to a lot of music that I came to love way later on. And I think most people are really not that way anymore. Younger, maybe all music lovers now are so much more open to like all kinds of music.
Yeah,
and it's about music and not genres.
You're right. The genre thing seems to be gone. There's no like this is alternative, this isn't. I think
which is so much more exciting and cool.
It is really cool, but Jay Mascis is still recording.
Yes, Jay Mascis is still recording, and he's making killer music right now. Like, I mean, still some of his Dinosaur records that he's done in the past, like, you know, 10 years, there are awesome songs on those records.
Yep.
And
yep.
His solo material is so strong.
He also has a recording on Sub Pop with Kim Gordon.
Oh my God. That was a kind of a dream come true.
You know what? We're out of time. And I feel like I just started talking to you that I want to talk much more about the music that's out now.
Oh my God.
We'll have to have you come back and talk more about the history.
Mark, I would love that.
Well, I want to talk more specifically about the history of Sub Pop and you, and then what it's like to live there. I know that Maura is moving back east.
Yeah, she is. She's so psyched.
I know. It'll be great. Well, this very special episode of Inquiry, we've been talking with Megan Jasper, CEO of Sub Pop Records. She has a great essay in the new book, This Woman's Work, Essays on Music, and that is an important book. And back in the day, she was a rock host on Positive Noise here on WICN with one of the great shows. Megan, it's been a real pleasure.
Oh, Mark, you are the best, and I thank you for having me. I so appreciate it.
Thank you for coming on. I appreciate it. At some point, we gotta just reminisce about everything that went on all the stories. I've got stories to tell you. I'm sure you got stories to tell me. You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.